Genesis 35.
And God said to Jacob, "Rise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there. Make an altar there to the Lord who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you, and purify yourselves and change your garments. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has gone with me wherever I have gone." So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods that they had and all the rings that were in their ears. Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree that was near Shechem. And as they journeyed, a terror from God fell upon the cities that were around them, so that they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. And Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him. And there he built an altar in a place called El Bethel, because there God had revealed himself to him when he had fled from his brother. When Devorah, Rivka's nurse, died, and she was buried there under an oak below Bethel. So he called its name Alon Bakut. God appeared to Yaakov again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him. And God said to him, "Your name is Yaakov. No longer shall your name be called Yaakov, but Yisrael, but Yisrael should be your name." So he called his name Yisrael. And God said to him, "I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come from your own body. The land that I gave to Abraham and to Isaac, I will give to you, and I will give the land to your offspring after you." Then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken to him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he had spoken with him, a pillar of stone. He poured out a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. So Yaakov called the name of the place where God had spoken with him, Bethel. Then they journeyed from Bethel. When they were still some distance from Ephrat, Rachel went into labor, and she had hard labor. And when her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, you have another son." And as her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called him Ben-Yamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrat, that is, Bethlehem. But Yaakov set up a pillar over her tomb. It is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. Yisrael journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Adar. While Israel lived in that land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard it. Now the sons of Yaakov were 12. The sons of Leah, Reuben, Yaakov's firstborn, Shimon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, the sons of Rachel, Yosef, and Benjamin, the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's servant, Dan, and Naphtali, the sons of Zilpah, Leah's servant, Gad and Asher. These were the sons of Yaakov were born to him in Padan Aram. And Yaakov came to his father Yitzhak at Mamre, or Kirat Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Yitzhak had sojourned. Now the days of Yitzhak were 180 years. And Yitzhak breathed his last, and he died, and was gathered to his people, old and full of days. And his sons, Esau and Yaakov, buried him.
Any comments or thoughts?
I have several. So I was wondering, in verse 6, Yaakov came to Luz, but it also says that is Bethel. Why does it have two different names?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
In verse 6?
Yeah.
It called it Luz.
And Luz, right.
But it said also known as Bethel. Why does it have to be?
And then it was renamed,
yeah.
Basically.
Oh, it was renamed later. Okay.
Jacob was the one that renamed it at that particular point in time.
Okay. And then are you going to be explain in verse 14 the drink offering and the oil offering?
Okay, that's debatable. What it is the drink offering generally refers to something different. There's a debate upon that one. Most drink, if it says drink offering, generally means something like wine or something of that nature, rather than an oil. An oil is something you anoint with. The drink mm-hmm. offering also, in that, but what verse is that now?
14.
14, okay. And he poured a drink offering on thereon, and he poured oil thereon. So two things took place. Most of the time, biblically, when it comes to a drink offering, it means wine. And not just water. If it's just water, you would say use water. But most biblical, when you give an offering in the book of Leviticus, it talks about the drink offering. It's always refers to wine. I don't know. I think it's the very first time this ever was recorded in Genesis prior to Moses. That's an interesting thought of what why it was. I don't have a complete answer to your question of why, but nonetheless, I have an idea. Okay. We'll get to there.
Okay. And then one last thing. In verse 18, he was named Benjamin, but originally Ben-Oni, right?
Ben-Oni,
why
yeah.
was that changed?
We'll talk about that, yeah. There's a reason why she did. That does involve something very, very important in political, I'm sorry, prophetic statement.
When they cleansed themselves, they took away their gods, but they hid them under a tree.
Uh-huh.
Does that mean they went back and got them later?
We'll talk about that. That's good. You've got questions. You ask questions. I have an answer for you. Now, remember, sometimes my answer has absolutely no value. You know that, right? to answer your question, no, they did not go back. Because nothing in the Torah ever says they went back. Whoever the they were. By the way, do you know who the they were? All right, let's start out with verse number 1. Now, it's very important that we kind of pay attention to a little bit what was said here. Now, Elohim said unto Jacob, or Yaakov, rise up and go to Bethel. Why do you want to go to Bethel? No, to build an altar and all that kind of stuff, right? Why must he go back to Bethel?
It's the vision. He made the contract with God at Bethel.
Made a contract with God. But if you bring me back to this place, I promise you, it wasn't an oath, I promise you a tithe of all that I have. And so God says, okay, pay up. Time to pay up now. So all those 20 years, he was with his brother, another brother, 20 years plus, by the way, that he was with his in-law. Now God says, I want you to go there and you build an altar. Now, what would you think he built an altar for? Why would God want an altar for? If you're going to give something to God, what do you give him? 3,000 billion bucks when you don't have it? You're going to give him animals, all right, and a certain kinds of animals. So that was a whole offering that, in a sense, the tithe was a whole offering that Jacob gave unto God. Because he promised 10%. So that was kind of fascinating to pay attention to on that one. So, you know, you open your mouth, beware, God may call you to pay up 20 or 30 years later. But besides that, he says now, Jacob said to his, now this is very important, listen to verse 2. He said unto his household, and to all that were with him, put away the strange Elohim that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments. What was wrong with their garments? They're filthy, right? No.
I don't have the answer, but I know that when Yahweh met them on the mountain with Moses, they had to clean their tents and change their clothes too.
Correct, for different reasons, but yes. Here they're not cleaning their garments in order to meet God. Or are they? First thing he told them is, I want you to be cleaned and change your garments. He didn't say clean them, change them. Get rid of the old. Who's he talking to? His sons? And his daughter? Before going to Bethel, we see Jacob now removing all images and having them clean and change their entire attire. This was even for those with whom he had been taken. Who was with Jacob at this point in time, besides his sons?
By this time, he was pretty wealthy, so he had manservants, maidservants. He had a whole entourage, maybe.
Yeah, the previous chapter, something took place. Remember what it was? They killed all the men and took all the women and all the children. Now, what do you think those women and those children had to wear? Well, now listen very carefully. He says something very important. Oh, you had a statement?
Yeah, I was going to say those people that he had plundered just before in Shechem.
So now we go on here, and he says, let us rise and go to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto Elohim, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me all the way when I went. Now, very fascinating, verse 3, too, brother. And they gave unto Jacob all the strange Elohim, which were in their hand, the earrings were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under an oak tree by Shechem. Left them there in that land. Now, all the strange Elohim. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that Jacob's sons had worshiped different Elohims? Different gods, different worshipers? Or do they worship the same God that Jacob did? Well, they were the same God Jacob did. What about the people from Shechem? They had different gods. Their garments they would wear were garments that had to glorify the Elohim of that area. Now, discard those. Not just clean them, get rid of them. Yes?
The earrings, didn't those represent slavery or that you belong to somebody?
Yes, to a degree. So now he's getting rid of those earrings. Now the people no longer are part of the Elohim they are going to have been worshiping. Now they're free from it, whether they want to be or not. But they did it. They got rid of it. So your answer to your question is yes. It's not that women shouldn't have earrings. It's just that the particular earrings were a symbolism of bondage or commitment. You'll be a quote, slave forever. Now, there was no more could these women, who was going to be their boss? Their fathers are dead. Their brothers are dead. Their husbands are dead. Who's their new boss? Who's the new one's going to own them? So now, yeah, it's Jacob and his family now own them. So they had to discard those particular items, and he hid them under a tree. He, Jacob, did. So when he hid them under a tree, doesn't mean the rest of them saw where he hid them. I imagine his sons helped do it. I don't doubt that. So you get a little picture of an idea of the event. Now, why did he want to do that? Because he was going to go to Bethel. Yes.
Well, and did Rachel still have the ones she stole from her dad?
It would have been gone by now.
Well, yeah, but they would have.
Well, it doesn't say that. We're going to assume it is. That's all where we're at. This particular point in time, obviously, it's gone. But remember, that was the Elohim of her father, not of hers, but she just stole it. Probably because it was gold. Maybe it's pretty. Now, a lot of people take things because it looks very pretty, very artistic in the style. Yes.
I have some old idols, like, you know, holy water fountains. You know, statues of Mary or what. Is this the thing to do, to bury it? I mean, you know, I'm not really sure. Or is it better to burn them, or what do we do now?
Well, you're going to have to make your own judgment on those things, whether you destroy them, throw away, burn them, melt them down. And if it's gold, melt it down, get into gold now, whatever you want to do. That's your decision, not mine. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You're going to have to make a decision on that one, okay? Or whomever asked the question. Because I'm not going to go into what you should or should not do. I'm just reading what Scripture says. You know that of me, right? You have to live according to how you understand and what you believe. and what you can or able to do at this point in time in your life. Not there. Now, remember the other thing, before we get on the next statement. Verse 5. And he journeyed, and the terror of Elohim was upon the cities that were round about him, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. Now, it's funny, we have him later, we'll keep on going this thing, and it says the sons of Jacob. It's a phrase we need to kind of pay attention to, because here there is a movement or a change that's taking place. And we can question all day long, why this, why that, why this. And now we'll talk about sons of Jacob, and it's spelled out at the very end. We'll get to that point in a minute. But watch the pattern. Watch what's being said, and I'll tell you a little bit more of what God has in mind. Okay? Remember the last chapter where Jacob was terrified and frightened of what his two sons did. You remember that? And he says, they're going to come and kill me. And what was their answer? What was their, Ah, right. Treated our sister as a harlot. Ooh, that's pretty powerful words, isn't it? Now, let me ask you a question. I said it last week. I said, sometimes looked like God is really was behind this whole thing, right? This chapter, listen to this verse. Jacob was terrified. It wasn't the fear of Jacob's sons that frightened the people. What frightened the people? Elohim frightened them. So I'll kind of tell you, but Elohim backs up Simeon and Levi and what they did. Terrify them. Frighten them. Scare them. So we have a picture here where God said, I will put fear upon them. And they were so scared that, Jacob was afraid of them. He had no idea that they're more terrorized of the God of Jacob than they were of Jacob and his sons. You know, back in those days, they didn't have a theory of evolution. They believed there was literally lots and lots of gods. And they really believed that after what took place in Shechem, that God, that Elohim, that Jacob worships, is more powerful than the gods that were in Shechem. Wiped them all out. Now, if you live in that society, that kind of world, you're fully aware of fear. In our society today, we could care less. We're not afraid of anything. We boast that we are proud, strong, we fight for our rights, we fight for our privileges, we go to war, we do all that kind of stuff. However, back in those, we don't ask God to deliver us as a nation, as a people, as a whole. We ask our senators, our representatives, our president, some to protect us and put fear into other people or whatever you want, but not God. You think God has something to say about it? Okay. Because the word terror here in Hebrew basically breaks down. It means literally to break down or break apart. All right, by violence or by terror. So here is the people who had bravery in their own God and the God of Jacob, in a sense, terrorized their God, in a sense, and they were afraid to go any farther. It would appear that Elohim did back up Simeon and Levi. Because that is not allowed. In our society today, when a girl is raped, we try to find, I don't know, some way of letting the guy off instead of death. But that's our society. Okay, that's not the society back there during the time of Jacob. And then Jacob came to Luz, which is the same name as Bethel, because Jacob named it there. The old word for Luz also means, in that foreign language, the house of God. He just turned it into a Hebrew phrase and Hebrew word. It was Luz during the time of Abram and Isaac. Then he called that place El in the house of El. Elohim is in his house. To translate that real simple. This is where Elohim lives. El is in his house. That's the basic simplicity of breaking that phrase down. I thought that was very fascinating when I looked at it. And something else happened. Verse 8. First name, this time the name shows up. Jebra. It shows up only in one other place, many years later. And of course, that's Deborah in the book of Judges. Judges, yeah. What does that name mean? It always means B. Everybody translates it as B. It's very fascinating. Okay, let me ask you a question. Why was it translated as B? Is that Hebrew for B? Okay.
She was a woman of many words.
Listen to what he said. Do you know what Debar means? Or Devar means? Words or word. Her name means, it's a feminine word for the word words. 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 She wasn't a bee, she meant words. It's a very fascinating, didn't you know that? And when you have Deborah in the book of Judges, she had a lot of words to say. Right? You go back and study her, a lot of words she said. Okay? So it's a very powerful woman. This particular woman was a very special lady, obviously, to Rachel. Rebecca. A very special lady. Doesn't explain, go beyond that, and he just called the plea where the weeping under the oak tree. That's where they buried her, and doesn't tell you how long they were there. Doesn't matter. And then verse 9, Elohim appeared unto Abram again when he came out of his father-in-law's place. Verse 10, thy name is, now this is very carefully. You remember, he already name was changed, or quote, you'll be called now Israel. Now, after he's crossed over, now he's in the land. He lived in Shechem for we don't know how many years now. Maybe 5, 10, 15 years. Doesn't tell us how long at all. We're getting close because there was a time of the death. But anyway, here we have now God says to him, thy name is Yaakov. Thy name shall not be called anymore Yaakov, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And Elohim said, El Shaddai. You see it up there? Now remember what he said to Moses? They knew me by what? They knew me by what? El Shaddai. And that's, Jacob knew him by that name. Jacob knew it, Isaac knew it by that name. Abram knew it by that name. Now most of you know what that name means, right? What? The deluger, the one that destroys, the destroyer. He'd given that name after the flood. We think, oh, Almighty, he can do anything. Yeah, of course. No, he's Almighty. In fact, he has this power to terrorize people. To frighten people. We don't like a God that makes people afraid, do we? Well, find another one then. Does the God be very much Jacob do that? Just that. Alright. Now, as we read this, he said, now there are going to be kings shall come out of thy loins, and in the verse 11. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac to thee, I give it to thee, and thy seed after thee, I will give it to, give the land. And then, of course, Elohim went up and departed. So Jacob set up a pillar. He placed there, and of course he had a pillar of stone. And this is where he poured the drink offering. Like the question was coming up. And biblically speaking, this drink offering comes from out of the book of Leviticus more than any place else. And it has to do with taking the wine. And taking the wine, and you're pouring over a stone. Not on the ground, but on the stone. Now, then he turns around and he puts oil. We don't know what kind. I'm not going to question it. And he puts oil and anoints it, that stone or that pillar, with oil. Let me ask you a question. Why did he do that for? What was he showing us? What was he telling us? Or what God wants us to see about this stone, about this pillar? We're not supposed to worship stones, right? Now, he used another stone many years earlier, right? He laid his head on it, right? And he set it upright like a pillar. Is there any parallel? Apparently not, right? I'm sorry, what? Coincidence, yes. Everything's coincidental in the Bible. Nothing happens in any kind of order. So he did this. And he called the name of that place Bethel. So here's this stone. And he puts wine on it, more than likely, and oil. What does the stone represent? Yes?
A memorial.
Okay. Memorial to what?
To his visitation from God.
His what?
His visitation from God.
Okay. What did God say to him? You will no longer be called Jacob. You will now be called Israel. Now, I told you what the word Israel meant, right? It's written right there in the very first time it was changed, and the angel said, this is what it means, right? We read that, right? What does it mean? The one who rules as God rules as a prince. That's what the name means. Got Yod-Vrim means he, Jacob, king or tsar of Elohim. He, Jacob, a commander, you might say, a king, a ruler of Elohim or from Elohim. So God gave him that angel gave him that position. And now back here, God is now talking directly to Jacob and says, that's who you are. Do you remember that? All right. Now, in this process, something happened. Verse 16. What happened? Rachel went into labor. Fascinating. And she, there's a different word here. We'll go through the words in a minute. And she failed, and she had a hard labor. And, you know, typical female, right? We all know every woman who's ever had hard labor, they know what that means, right? Yeah. The answer is, yeah, you do. Now, there is something to pay close attention to. We'll backtrack just a little bit. Ephrat, by the way, the name is came to Ephrat, which is not quite near Jerusalem itself. And that word just means a fullfillness or a plenty or being very fruitful. That's what that word, really simplicity of that word means. So there's where she had hard labor. Fruitful? Interesting. Odd terminology, isn't it? And we'll get back to this in just a minute. And she said here, and it came to pass that when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said something to her. About what? About what? Uh-huh. So I want to ask, not you ladies that maybe you know or do not know, But put yourself just in a moment. You're having this child. You know something's going to happen to you. You know it's the end of your life. She's going to die. She knows she's going to die. And the midwife is not telling her, oh, do not be afraid. You will live. Doesn't say that, does she? Do not be afraid. You'll have a son. Very important. Is this, let me ask you a real serious question now. Was this son born before Jacob's name was changed or after Jacob's name was changed? Key thing to keep in mind. Key thing to keep in mind. Now, she died, yes. But what was her concern? It appears what the midwife was telling her. The boy is going to live. Now, she said she called him. What would you call him? Ben-O-Nim. Ben-Onai. And it's been translated as son of my sorrow. And that word really means sorrow or wickedness or trouble. So now she named her son. Did she name that son because he was the one that gave her sorrow? Was he the one that gave her wickedness? Was he the one that gave her trouble? See, all those words don't seem to work out right, right? So was God really saying this son, she really saying this son is a cause of my sorrow?
Does it have any, I don't know the answer, but I know that when a woman is not transgressing, or a man, it says somewhere in the Bible that your labor will go well if you're worshiping God correctly. And she, I'm wondering if it has anything to do with these gods she took.
And before we go any farther, I'm going to go into this a little bit deeper here. Just a minute, hold your. We know that Jacob renamed him as Benjamin, which he did rename him much later, by the way. It wasn't at this particular point in time of her death. We'll get to that later. Now, let's backtrack just a little. All right. Maybe go forward just a bit here. And verse 19, and Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. Now, let's backtrack. Book of Matthew, chapter 2, starting in verse 16. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, he exceedingly wroth, and he sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coast thereof. So he did more than just Bethlehem. He killed more outside of the coast or the borderline of where Bethlehem was at. From 2 years old and under. So we know the Messiah was at least 2 years old at that point in time when he sent this order out to kill. And according to the time which he had diligently earned or acquired of the wise men. And there was filled within, was spoken up by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, that's a very fascinating thing about Jeremiah the prophet. May have nothing to do with what we're talking about today. Let's think. In Ramah, you know that name, Ramah? Interesting, huh? There was a voice heard, lamentation and weeping, a great mourning. Rachel, the one that's dead, she's crying. Why is she crying? Has what? Has to something with her kids. Has something to do with her kids. Who were her kids? Jehoshaphat, son of my sorrow. Son of my pain. Son of my agony. And would not be comforted. Because they were not. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 31. I advise you to read the whole chapter. This is where it's quoted from. Now we're talking about Rachel. And we're talking about the death of Rachel. And an unusual name she used to name her son, son of my sorrow, or son of my pain, son of my agony, son of my, let's put it this way, weeping. All right? When a woman is in sorrow, real physical sorrow, what is she in? Pain? Or is she really in sorrow? Something is lost. Something is gone. When a woman loses her son or daughter, she is in sorrow. She is in pain. And so we have here, way back and during the time of Abraham, or Jacob rather, an unusual phrase, and has nothing to do with anything except what we could think of, has a connection much farther on down the line. Now, we'll read the whole chapter. Let's go to 31, starting verse 15. Yes.
When my mother was born, my grandmother knew she was going to die. And my mother was just a few days old when my grandmother died. The one thing she told my grandfather was, she was Catholic. And she was Jewish, so she had an another fear there. But she made my grandfather promise to raise the children in the church. That's a mother's concern when she's dying, is the spiritual well-being of her children.
Now, as we go through here, let's go to verse 15 here in Jeremiah 31. Thus saith Yahuwah. This is Yahuwah talking. Elohim, God. A voice was heard in Ramah. Lamentations. And bitter weeping. Rachel, weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. What? They were not what? Verse 16. Thus says Yahweh, Yahuwah. Refrain thy voice from weeping. He's talking to Rachel. And the eyes from thy tears, talking to Rachel. And thy work shall be rewarded, talking to Rachel, says Yahuwah. And they, your children, Rachel, shall come again from a land of the enemy. What is this referring to? You remember what took place in Matthew? 2 year old and under, male boys were killed, and even on the outskirts of the city of Bethlehem. So is God showing us way back in Rachel's time something that she has grounds to cry about? Now, did she understand? I question whether or not God did not let her see what was going to happen. We have a tendency to judge that the only one that God ever showed anything to was Jacob. But none of his sons, none of his daughters, none of his friends, and the only one that God ever showed himself was to Isaac. Nobody else, nobody else. And the only one that showed is Abram, and nobody else. And nobody knew God except Abram. That's not what history tells you. God speaks to even a pagan. We just got to reading all that, right? He'll even speak to a pagan, terrifying them, frightening them, and they say, oh, I better not do what I'm doing. So backtrack a little bit more. Let's backtrack to the 16th verse in Genesis. Genesis 35, 16. Remember the name? Ephrat? If you start looking that word up and all over the place, you find it very fascinating. One was in Isaiah 45, verse 8. Now, it's interesting, this word is listed there. It means to bear fruit or bring forth or to branch off. Branch off. Remember what I told you what tribe means in Hebrew? It means a branch. Something's branching off from some other source. Verse 8, rain down, you heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them be fruitful, and bring forth salvation. I find that very fascinating. So we start using the word Ephrat, which is later known as Bethlehem, which means the house of breads. Plurality, house of breads, a lot of breads. Now she died in a place called Ramah. You know where Ramah's at? Well, ancient times, not modern times. Today, that place is completely engulfed by the greater city of Jerusalem, whose massive, large territory of hundreds of miles, maybe about a lot of miles. In the old days, it was no bigger than a 5 square. 5 square. You can walk the old city of Jerusalem, and it's a 5 square. And several. How long average man can walk 4 miles in 1 hour? So how many times could you walk around the city of Jerusalem? Quite a bit of times, right? In a day. A real short, small little city. Not very big. But Ramah is 5 miles north of that city. That's where the tomb of Rachel is at. I think it's probably been destroyed by now, of course. I don't know. The word Ramah means a hill. Not a mountain, a hill. So she is buried on a hill, a hilltop. All right? But she didn't make it all the way to the house of bread, did she? Question. Was she fruitful in Ramah? Yes, she was. And it branched out and went into the city of Bethlehem, where we have our Creator Son was born there. Now, because she weeped, why would you think she's weeping? Just because they get back to the land? What took place during the time of Herod? Who was he trying to kill? And if he succeeded in killing the child, what do you think Rachel was thinking or be thinking? My kids are gone. Out. Doesn't say dead. They have been removed. Doesn't say dead. They're not in the land anymore. They're out, gone, scattered. Where was Messiah? At 2 years old, where was he? He was in Egypt. So we see a picture, unclear to a point, a picture of why Rachel, son of my sorrow, my sadness, my crying, my weeping, prophetic thing way deep in the future. I'm almost finished here. And then, of course, he and Israel journeyed and spread his tent toward the Tower of Ebar. You know what Tower of Ebar really means? How many translations do you have that says tower? Verse 21. No, nobody has it? I'm sorry, what? Yes, tower. No other translation? Oh, maybe they got translated right. Who knows? That's good. Because it's not a tower. There was no tower there. The word tower is from an old, the Hebrew word. It really means to basically a heap or a pillar or a raised bed. So it's like it's a higher hill. The bed, the water, the ground is up higher than the ground around about it. The ground around it would be, we call a valley. That's not a valley when it's above the valley, right? And the word tower is horribly used there, so I want to straighten that one out. It doesn't mean anything. The other one is flock. It's where this high land was, and there was flock. And where it means the sheep and the goats. That's where he, Jacob, had his flock of both sheep and goat, probably both. I'm not quite sure which one. Of course, he would dwell in the land for quite a while. And then, of course, we'll go into it later, Reuben did. He went and he lied with a concubine, one of Jacob's wife. Now, that latter part of verse 22 is very interesting. And it says, now these are the sons of Jacob, were 12. Doesn't say the sons of Israel. Why would it not say the sons of Israel? Sorry, what? Well, Benjamin's listening to this bunch, by the way. Wait, stop for half a second. What does Jacob mean? What? The one that puts a hand on the backside of someone's foot and makes him fall. That's what it is. That's what his name was. Hang on the backside of the foot, make the guy fall. You walk along and someone grabs your back heel and you're still moving, all down you go. He didn't just hang on to it for a trip. He hanged and would have had to pull at the same time. So there's no way you could survive. Now, these sons of Jacob, they were the sons of Jacob. They were kind of like the same character, personality, you might say, or, quote, genes. But Jacob was converted. The man Jacob was converted. He got into a war, and he lost. Who won? That angel won. And the angel said, okay, now, let me go. No, I'm not going to let you go. I don't know how he hang on to him. You know, maybe hang on to him with a wrestling. Doesn't make a difference. But Jacob already deadly wounded. He couldn't really move very, very good. He was on the ground, injured, unable to walk. And, okay, so you want me to bless you? And I mentioned last time, how many of you men, when you're fighting with somebody, and they actually hurt you, but you pin them down, and you're in more pain than they are, and you say, okay, and they say, okay, let me go, you won. And you say, I ain't going to let you go until you bless me. How many men are you going to say that? I'm going to get 1, 2, 3. That's human nature, right? But not with Jacob, because Jacob knew something was very unusual about that time, because he's told to stay behind. You remember that? I'm almost finished here. They're all named off. We don't need to go back to those names again. Verse 28, and the days of Isaac were 104 years. Isaac gave up the ghost, or gave up his spirit, and died, and was gathered together to his people, old and full of days, and his son Esau and Jacob buried him. How old was Jacob at this point in time? Huh? Jacob, not 120. So Jacob's up there in years now. So a lot of years now have passed. He's lived in this area for quite a long time. And we'll go back into next chapter. We'll go back into the story of Esau and a little bit about him. Okay. Yes.
One of the interesting things about when you see her sorrow and being comforted by that is that child was Benjamin. And one of the great promises you see through the prophet is that her children would be brought out from among the nations.
Yeah.
What great force came from the tribe of Benjamin to bring the descendants out from the nations? The Apostle Paul.
Apostle Paul. Who said I am of the tribe of Benjamin? It's just coincidence, right? Happens to just, he just happened to be one, right? Well, Benjamin was the one that's going to bring and has brought out, that is the son of Benjamin, is bringing out the, quote, house of Jacob, bringing them out and bringing them in. Not to the land yet, but into another land, into the kingdom of heaven, bringing them into that land, that territory, that home. So are you members of the kingdom of heaven? Or are you just members of the United States of America? I think America will perish one of these days. And I don't think I almost reached a whole hour. Sorry about that, Daniel. I started 10 minutes too, and I'm 10 minutes there. Daniel has a statement.
And not that you haven't answered this, but curiosity. So Deborah, Rebecca's handmaid,
yeah,
was with Jacob and his family, yet Isaac was still back at Mamre.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that happen? Either Jacob went down to Mamre first, got her,
right,
brought her, went up to Bethel, and then came, or lived at Shechem for a while with Deborah, and then later went back down to Mamre with Isaac. It seems like a strange route.
Well, I understand that, but for some reason, it's written there for a reason. So I know that we know this much, that Isaac and Jacob, when Jacob came back home, he didn't just stay one spot. He obviously went back to see his mom and dad. All right? Obviously went back to see his mom and dad. And he did see his brother. It says later on in Scripture, he did see his brother in the land of Canaan. And it was too much. Later on, we'll get that in the next chapter. It was too much for both of them to dwell in the land of Canaan. Both of them increased a tremendous amount of land, a lot of property, a lot of cattle, a lot of sheep. And the Canaanites couldn't even handle that much themselves. And so they had to depart. This is when Esau didn't leave the land of Canaan until after the death of Isaac. It's a long time, 120 years. And Esau was also 120. Yes.
Well, one other thing here. I think it's interesting that in chapter 35, verse 19, Rachel dies, and then you've got three verses in 22, Reuben decides to take Bilhah, who happens to be Rachel's handmaiden, which is an oddity.
I didn't go into the theory of this for a reason, because I don't have time.
Okay?
I'm limited to my amount of time. Maybe I could cover that a little bit next week of about Reuben and what his object was and why he did it. But we're not going to go there at this particular point in time. Does that answer your question? There's a lot of questions are hard. They're also speculated questions, speculated assumptions, speculated this. And I will tell you next week, these are speculations. This is the assumption. This is what they think it meant. This is what they think occurred and why he did what he did. There was a plan motive behind Reuben. He was not just a oversex kid or a young man. We don't know how old he was. He's probably between the ages of 20 and 30, maybe 35, maybe up to the ages 40. We don't know how old it was when that took place. All we know, right afterwards, we have the death of Isaac. Next statement, that is, it's not necessarily chronological order. That's not how God works. He does not work in chronological order. He works in a pattern. This pattern is like that pattern. Look at them both. Time zone means nothing to him. And so when we read some of these things, we have to kind of say, it's not like it happened immediately. Sometime in the life, it did take place, and apparently it took place at this particular point in time. To answer your question, I'll try to get it to a little bit next week, as much as possible. I don't have a clear answer, but I'll give you the answer that I have been, quote, told, end of quote. How's that sound?